Today, we've got Patrice McCormick. I'm so glad she's back to Care Group again. Patrice loves God, she loves people, she loves his word, and she's contagious about it, so I love that about her. And she's been a home church leader over 22 years, I think, maybe more. And she's also taught classes here at Zenos for years. Any of you been in her classes? Yeah, awesome. She's a great teacher. And when her boys were around 2 and 4-ish, I think, and she decided to go for a third, got twin girls. Same thing happened to my mom. She had 3, went for 4, got 2, got 5. So if you're thinking about that one more, just want to think about that. It's possible. So she had 4 kids under the age of 4 at that point. And she still had a burden to make her home as a haven for others and did it all through these years. Now her kids are, the girls you said are 18, the boys are 20 and 22. And one of her boys is here today to share on this topic as well, which is awesome. So I'll turn it over to Patrice. Thanks.
Do you want me to play? Go ahead. All right. Okay. Well, thank you for coming out. I'm going to pray quick, and then we'll get started on a topic that I really enjoy. And I have very distinct opinions about it, so hopefully I won't become obnoxious. So, Lord, thanks for being here with us. You promised that where 2 or more are gathered in your name, you'd be with us. So we thank you for that. Lord, this is a wonderful topic. And living this out, I know, has brought great joy to our family. It's been such a privilege and been so fun. So, Lord, help me to communicate that today. Lord, I pray you'd use questions and comments, Lord, to get everything out that you want us to talk about. And thanks so much for our son Kevin coming up. And I pray you'd give him what you want him to say from the kid's perspective, Lord. Amen. All right. So this morning's topic is making your home welcoming. And I think it's already been clear, but I'm not talking about making your home welcoming for your family. I'm assuming you're already doing that. I don't think that's really maybe the issue so much in the Christian community today. I wonder if the biggest issue for the Christian community as a whole is the willingness to open up our houses to friends, to neighbors, to people in your home group, to strangers, to people you don't like. But the willingness to have like a revolving door in your house. Now, of course, there's qualifications, safety, and you have to have your family time and your date time with your kids. Again, I'm going to make the assumption that you're aware of that and you're doing those things, all right? So though I'm talking in that context, it's this willingness to have your home open and to let people come into your house. So you guys have all been in homes that you felt warm and comfortable, and you've been in homes where you feel like the hostess is communicating, I cannot wait till she gets the heck out of here, right? You've all had that experience. Give me some things that made a house feel welcoming, that you were glad to be there and you wanted to go back. And you have to yell it loud so it can hear through this thing. But come on. I know it's early, but you've already been up with your kids, so you've already been up for a while.
Food.
They have food. Does it necessarily have to be that good of food?
No.
It helps. But food. Right. Sometimes they maybe did make something special for you. Right? Yeah, so they got something to eat. That's good. What else? They're asking you questions rather than sitting there talking about themselves on and on and on and on sometimes, right? And you're thinking, when can I get out of this house? Because, my God, I could care less about the potted flowers. All right, so they're engaged with you. They're asking you questions. Yeah. You don't have to. Right, they're relaxed about their stuff. They're not uptight. They don't go as you put your glass down on their table and think, "Oh my God, I better put that back up." Right. So they're relaxed about their stuff. They don't go nuts when somebody spills something, a cup of coffee gets spilled or a beer gets spilled. They don't go nuts about that. How about with kids? What are some things that you can do as a mother that makes neighborhood kids feel welcome? Childproof, you can, yeah, make it so when the mother brings the kid over, they don't have to take a deep breath, right? Best snacks in the neighborhood. And what I felt also was really important, what was hard as a mom, is when you bought that week's supply of really good snacks And then all the neighborhood kids come over, and the whole week of really good snacks are gone in a day, right? And you're thinking, oh, but we are going to have those fruit snacks on Friday. Now they're all gone. But you needed to do it because all the kids were there, right? So there's a freedom with our stuff. So there's time involved. There's stuff involved. There's an attitude involved. People just even invite you over. They're free to make the invitation. Please come, please come, please come. And then when you do come, they set aside what they're doing and engage with you, right? They'll you know, sit down, and I'm going to look to you and talk with you. So these are all different ways that we can do, and we'll talk some more about these as the whole morning goes on. But if there was a theme with all of some of these things we talked about, the theme is that it's costly. Wrong way. It's costly to open your house, right? It's costly. Give me some costs that you have incurred or you have seen other people incur because they've chosen to open their home to strangers, friends. So none of you do it. Is that what you're telling me? I don't know what the costs are. I've never done it, so I don't have anything to say. So come on, Aunt Jamie, yeah. Right. Right, so you had an agenda for that day, and all of a sudden the friend drops by, and you have to set your agenda aside, thinking, oh, crap, I had that afternoon planned to get that done, and the rest of the weekend looks really busy, so I don't know when it's going to get done. So your agendas get set aside.
I was thinking I'm really comfortable at my in-laws' house because they have, like, comfy furniture and good food. So, like, I'm like, I want that for my house, too, but I don't have the money for lots of furniture. So,
what's
that? Would be costly for me.
To get nice furniture or?
To get more furniture.
To get more furniture.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Ruth. Yeah.
This is actually a cost that your husband told me about one time. Since you guys have people at your house all the time, since I live across the street from you, I know that. But he was talking about how, like, you know, if it's not the one person there, it's somebody else. And he's like, sometimes you just want to go home and have 20 minutes on your couch by yourself.
Yes.
And how, you know, if you really do have that, our home is open for whoever God brings us in the moment. Like, you sacrifice that sacred alone time a lot.
Yeah, you got to be creative. You're absolutely right. We had a high school group in our house on Sunday nights, and we just have a living room, dining room. We don't have a rec room or anything like that. And there would be Sunday nights where we think, holy cow, my God, it'd be great just to watch The Amazing Race on our own couch in front of our own TV. And so there's that cost, right? Yeah.
Going back to what you said about being relaxed about your stuff, I always felt that I would be, but then I had a party for
right.
the Buckeye game, and I actually had a great turnout and had a lot of people that weren't in the group and were non-Christians. But by the end of the night, someone had spilled beer on
right.
our white chair.
Right, right.
That's stained, and yep. that bugged me. And then this was my fault because I brought the chair up, but there was a chair without a foot on it, just exposed kind of poles, and then there my nice hardwood floor got all scratched up.
Right, right.
And like, it irritated me so much when I didn't think that I would be irritated. And
right.
It bothered me, so.
Right. Yeah. Yes, we never know how tightly we hold on to our stuff until something happens to it. And then it's like, Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, I really do like that. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. So there's time, emotion, your stuff, energy, agendas. There's a huge, huge cost. And when I'm talking about making your home welcoming, again, I'm talking about a lifestyle, like Ruth was saying. It's not just once or twice things I do. I think I'll open my home for Easter this year. It will be grand. Well, that's a very nice thing to do. But again, we're talking about a lifestyle where people are in and out. This willingness to have people who aren't family members live with you. We've been fortunate enough. We've had some, we had a high school, and I'll tell you more about him later. We had high school student live with us. We've had a couple of them. Some worked out, some didn't. We now currently have another young woman that lives with us. It's 22, trying to get her GED. So It's a lifestyle. Now, as we've briefly talked about this, there is a cost involved to opening your home. And so instead of just jumping to the what can I do to open my home, I want to talk probably the biggest part of the time about why in the world would you even do it? It's your stuff will get broken, things will be stained, everything is messed up your whole day. So why would you do it? And my argument is if you're not convinced why you would do it, you're not going to do it over time. And if you do it, you'll do it very superficially, and you'll only do it when it's convenient, only invite the people that you like, only the fun people, not messy people, and that kind of thing. Which, and when we do that, it really misrepresents who God is and the love that he has for us, right? So why would you do it? Why would you do it? And it does reflect God's love for us, right? First and foremost, we open our homes because of what God has done for us. And all through Scripture, it says we love because God loves us. And so we open our homes because at some level, we've understood God's love for us. And because I know God's love, it is only the logical, rational, mindful thing to do is to give it away. And one way we give it away is we open our homes. Now, if you have a relationship with God through Christ, you understand the kind of love that God has for us is a very costly love, right? Right? It cost God dearly to enable us to come into a right relationship with him so we could experience his love. In Romans, that's really small print on my paper. Okay, in Romans 5, right? It's on your notes. It says, when we were utterly helpless, Christ came at just the right time and died for us sinners. But God showed his great love for us by sending Christ to die for us while we were still sinners, while we were very unlovable. For since we were restored to friendship with God by the death of his son, while we were still his enemies, we will certainly be delivered from eternal punishment by his life. Christ endured a great cost to enable us to come back into a right relationship with God. He had been in perfect harmony with God the Father and God the Holy Spirit for all of eternity. And so for some point in time, he said, I will leave this marvelous, harmonious, perfect relationship, and I'll come to earth and I'll become a man. And I will live a perfect life, and then I'll die on the cross for a bunch of sinners, for a bunch of ungrateful people, so that they can come back into a right relationship with my Father. And so the kind of love that God has for us is costly love. And so the kind of love then that we can give away to other people is costly. And for those of us who have this relationship with God, we understand the more we understand the cost that Christ incurred for me, the more I want to live that kind of life. It just is ludicrous to say, well, now, you know, I know Jesus gave up everything for me, but I think maybe I'm going to hold on to my white chair. I really don't want any stain on that white chair, so I'm going to hold on to I'll give them the junky chair. They can sit on the crappy chair, but not my good chair. And so it just becomes ludicrous when we're in our right mind to realize, why in the world would I hold on? Why would I shield myself from these costs when God the Father incurred the greatest cost ever so that I could come back into a right relationship with him? So first and foremost, the reason we're hospitable, the reason we open our houses, because we understand the kind of love God has for us. Now, as I thought about it, though, we continue to love like this because we understand that God's love is that type of love. Now, what do I mean by that? Okay, here's an example. When people come into your house, do you have a grumpy face on or do you show delight? I am so glad you are. Where have you been? I have missed you. This is especially good with teenagers. When the teenager, the kid that comes into your house most inconvenient time, you stop and say, golly, Greg, where have you been? I have missed your face. Come on, here, sit down. Let me sit down. Let me find out what's going on with you. Now, how in the world could we do anything like that? It's because that's how God responds to us when we turn to him, right? God never, ever says, where have you been? I've been waiting for you for I've been waiting for you for 30 years, and you're finally showing up? Well, for God's sakes, it's about time. He's never like that, right? Never, ever, ever. And Christ tells a parable, which a parable is just a story with a punchline, right? And this particular parable, I think a lot of us are familiar with, but it's the parable of the prodigal son. So the prodigal son, the son goes to his father and says, Dad, I kind of like you, but I really like your money better. And so do you think you could liquidate your estate, give me my half of the inheritance early so I can get out of here? Because I really want to go be me. And so the dad says, okay. And so then the dad gives him his inheritance. The kid goes, parties his brains out. And literally when he's eating pig slop, he comes to his senses and he says, this is really stupid. I think I'll go back to my father. So as he's heading back to his father, I know as a parent what I would be thinking. I'm not allowed, this is being recorded, so I can't say some of the thoughts that would be in my head, right? It's about time. I can't believe. Come on. But that is not how God responds at all, right? That's not at all how God responds. And so when the sons turn around in Luke 15, it says, and while he was still a long distance away, the kid was a long distance away, his father saw him coming. Filled with love and compassion, he ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. And his son said to the father, Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you. I am no longer worthy of being called your son. But his father said to his servants, quick, bring the finest robe in the house and put it on him. Get a ring for his finger and sandals for his feet. When you think, how is God going to respond to me this morning after I've yelled at my kid, I've already judged half the drivers in Columbus, what is God going to think of me? He says, oh, it is so good to see you. My child. Oh, my God, this is great. Let's sit down and talk. God says, I'm going to set aside the whole Middle East. I'm going to set aside the mess in Syria, the mess in Egypt, and I want to hear about your day. I want to hear about your day. I'm mindful of your day. And so because we know we have a father like that, when people stop by our house, we can sincerely and genuinely communicate that to the other person. Because I know the creator of the universe loves me, is mindful of me. I can be mindful of you. So again, these are fundamentals. But these are the fundamentals that I've had to go back to over and over and over again as we've had people in and out of our house, okay? So why would you open your house? Because God loves you. Second reason, why would you open your house on this ongoing basis is because it's going to give you great joy. It will give you great joy. And I can say that with confidence because that's what the Bible says, right? In John 13:17. This is, and in context, those some of you know, this is the night before Christ is going to go to the cross, so he's pretty busy. He's got a lot going on, right? He's got a lot going on. And so what does he do? He's the one who takes the most menial task, and he washes the disciples' feet. And then it's the punchline, right? John 13:10, if you do these things, you'll be blessed if you do them. And so we know that this ongoing lifestyle of opening your homes, of having people in, that will bring you joy. Now, will it always make you happy? No, not at all, right? You won't be happy when oh gosh, we finally got our living room painted, which we don't do very often. We got it all painted. I was so excited. And that night, there was a high school home group. And when I came home after the home group, there was this big tennis shoe print on my wall where the kid had put his foot up and leaned up against the wall. Was I happy? No, no, no. Or the kid that walked through our living room with mud on their shoes. And when we came home, you could see these muddy prints. And even the other kids were saying, what are you doing? Get your shoes off. Was I happy? No. Not at all. Did I have to pray? Did I have to think through? Yes. But an end result, it has brought us great, great joy to have a life where you're giving life away. But There's also great joy in knowing, oh, it's not that yet. Great joy in knowing that God has used you in a small way to change somebody's life. In small ways and big ways. In a small way, we had extra food, so I called a single parent in our home group to come over for dinner. And so she jokingly said, you know, Patrice, I didn't want to cook tonight, but I jokingly said to my daughter, maybe somebody will invite us over for dinner tonight and I won't have to cook. And that's what happened. I'm like, oh, Lord, thanks so much that you let me see an answered prayer immediately. All right? So that was really fun. It was great. Temperamentally, it was really fun. But on a grander scale, we had the opportunity to have a young man live with us for a year. And we just played a small role in God redeeming this young man's life, okay? It wasn't just us. It wasn't just my husband and myself. We played a small role, but it was absolutely pivotal. When he was about a junior in high school, he had moved into a ministry house because he could not live at home. There's lots of different reasons. So he moved as a junior in high school. So he skated through his junior year of high school. And then his second quarter of his senior year in high school, he quit going to school pretty much. And the guys in this house didn't know what to do with him. So his home group leaders came to Mike and me and asked us, could this young guy live with us? So he moved in. And Mike, my husband who's here, he went to the high school where he was going, sat down with all of his teachers, spent a whole night, probably broke about 8,000 privacy laws, but who cares? And the teacher said, this is what has to be done for this young man to graduate. And so he stayed with us. He went to school every morning, much against his will sometimes. He went to school every morning, and he graduated from high school. He was the first in his family to ever graduate from high school. His family would be a very typical of what's happened to low-income families. One brother's in jail. I don't know what's going on. I think the other brothers had trouble with juvenile authorities. But this young man has graduated from high school. After he moved out, and for about a year or so, he was making a bunch of stupid decisions, but we stayed in touch with him. And then he came to his senses. And now he's in college. He is in his second quarter at Columbus State. He has his driver's license. He has a job. He's in a ministry house. He's serving the Lord. Now, was it just us? No. Because there's his home group leader's here. And so you could see how God, over his life, had zoomed in and brought him people strategically that could assist him to make it. But I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that it was absolutely essential that he moved in with a family and that he ate dinner with us, that he's part of our family. He goes on family vacations with us. He comes home for Christmas. He comes home for family dinner. There is a joy unspeakable when I knew that Sasha was in college. And I can remember driving down the street saying, he's in college. He is in college. Oh, for God's sakes, he's in college. Was there a cost we incurred? Absolutely. But was that cost far away by the joy? You better believe it. You better believe it. And so it will give you incredible joy. It will give you incredible joy. It's going to purify your faith. And Jamie already brought that up. You think you love Jesus, you think you really trust Jesus, and then 8 million things are got to be done, and people are coming into your house, and you're, oh, golly, but I really wanted to get this done. And then Jesus will say, do you believe me? Do you believe me that if you live a life where you're giving your life away, it will bring you great joy? Do you believe me that I'll give you the time that you need to get the very thing done that I called you to do? Do you really think I'm a jerk of a God? That if I say, I want you to get done this today, and then I'm going to back away and say, well, good luck. I hope you can get this supernatural task done on your natural power. He's not like that, right? He says, if I've called you to do this task today, if you know that you're teaching home church tonight, I bet you, even though if that person drops by, he'll give you what you need to present the teaching that you need to present, right? Over and over and over again. But then when that issue comes up, our knee-jerk reaction is like, oh, you're not trustworthy, God. You're going to fail me now. And he's so gracious. He never takes it personally and says, you're right, I am. I'm really going to make you pay this time, right? He's always faithful. But when you open your home, he's going to say, do you believe me? And he exposes our idols, our things that we value more than him. Oh, yes, I thought I really was, I could freely give of my stuff. But I had this half-pint beer glass that I really liked that we brought from Ireland. It got broken the other day. And there was part of me was like, my glass is broken. And I thought, oh, but I thought things really didn't mean so much to me, but this thing did mean something to me. And so he'll put you in situations time after time after time where he says, here's an opportunity for me to continue to expose to you the things that you hold more dear than people and me. So it'll be a purifying faith experience, right? For those of us who have tried this, right? Yeah, oh yeah. And he knows just what to do to us too. Oh, the other reason you do it, you're acting as a good steward of God's wealth. Normally when we think of stewardship, we think you have to return something in as good as condition or better. When a good friend of ours was gone for Hawaii for 2 weeks, she gave me her car to use her car. So it was really nice. But I was really anxious driving it because I thought, I got to return Christy's car back to her and as nice as, no dings, and maybe I'll even clean it a little bit, right? So we have this natural tendency to think what good, that's what stewardship is. But in God's kingdom, he says, I've given you this really nice house and nice car so that it can be worn out and destroyed and used by the time you return it to me, right? That's God's sense of stewardship. Now, I'm not saying let the kid go destroy your house just for the heck of it, right? There's limits, and when the kid's being a jerk, you say, stop, quit throwing food in my house. It's really inappropriate. You never do it in your own home. Don't do it here, right? So I'm saying those kind of qualifications. But when you have people in and out and in and out, things get worn out. Your carpet gets dirty. Your kitchen floor gets torn up. You guys all know what I'm talking about. But a good steward of God's wealth is that you're going to have stuff used. And that's what's going to bring glory to God. It is great for your kids to have people in your home. It's great for your kids. It's great for us. By nature, our kids, and we're right along with them, we are very self-centered. Deep down inside, we really believe that it is all about me and my stuff and my order, whatever your thing is, control, comfort, man, my house is pretty. But it's great for our kids to have other people in our home that it gives them an opportunity to see that they're not the center of the world, that they're not the center. It gives them an opportunity to serve. I've seen our kids, we have a mentally handicapped kid that comes around a lot, a young adult. We just love this guy. But boy, there's an opportunity to serve, opportunity for my daughters to take him to the movie, to take him to go get ice cream, to all kinds of stuff. So it's a great way for our kids to serve. It's also a great way for our kids to see that it is a broken world, up close and personal, but in a safer environment. For a while there, we had a recovering drug addict live with us for about 6 months, 8 months, something like that. It was scary. It was very, very scary. But our kids got to see a really broken person and a flavor of what the world looks like. And it built in them a heart, slowly, in all of us, not just the kids, but in all of us, a heart of compassion. And I felt like God was saying, do you really believe the gospel is powerful? Do you believe the gospel is powerful enough that it could change someone's drug-addicted life? And so when you bring, again, wisdom and all that, and safety and all those kind of things, but it's really good for our kids to see that the world isn't white, middle-class America, which a lot of our kids do, right? And lastly, when you bring people into your home, it allows you to put your money where your mouth is as a Christian. We say, I'm worried about people going to hell. We say, I'm worried about the poor. We say that I don't like the fact that we are such an affluent culture. We say all these things. But if our kids never ever see us opening our homes to the poor, or they never see us let our things get nicked, to let our things get stolen. We've had stuff stolen from our house, things get broken. Then I think our kids have the right to say, I really wonder, Mom and Dad, how serious you really are about your faith, how much this Jesus makes an impact in your life. If it really doesn't change your lifestyle at all, then I gotta wonder about it, right? And I know there's people in this room here who, the neighborhoods they live in reflect their love for the poor, their commitment to the poor, their life choices. And so wherever we are, wherever God has put us, in whatever community, there's going to be opportunities for us to open our homes. Open your home to a kid who doesn't have a place to live. Open your home to kids who've been kicked out of his house. Maybe it's because that's, and that is probably my interest right now because of where our kids are age-wise. So it's going to be great for your kids, and it's going to be great for our watching world. The world around us looks and says, our world wants something to live for, something that's valuable, something that is significant, something that will make their life work. We live in a pragmatic world. And so they look at our life, and if we're no different than what everybody else is, why would we ever think they'd be interested in this Jesus guy who died on the cross so that I could live forever? And so the world will watch us. Will we do it perfectly? Good Lord, no. No. That's not the issue, right? But are we opening our doors? Are we opening our doors? And so I'm going to just mess this up a little bit. Hey, Kevin, do you mind coming up now? This is my oldest son, our oldest son, Kevin. And Mike, you know, if you have stuff to add too, my husband's here too, because this is a joint effort. This is definitely a joint effort. But one of the, Kim Geiser suggested, she said, why don't you have one of your kids come up here and talk about what it was like to grow up in our home and what we did right as parents that encouraged Kevin and our other sons and daughters to bring their friends out. So is there a mic? Okay, thanks. Just tell them a little bit who you are, where you've been, or.
Well, my name's Kevin. I'm Patrice's oldest son, and I think, I don't know. I mean, it's just one of those ones where, like, trying to reflect on like why I was so engaged with wanting to bring people over to my house in high school was a little difficult because my engagement with the Lord was not very high during those times. But I think that's one of the things that really stuck out to me. And reflecting on this is the fact that while my engagement was still working through that period of time, and it wasn't until about college where it became something that I wanted to become serious about, I think my parents' engagements with my friends still reflected that high commitment. And that was one thing that I think was something that was really, actually has been really beneficial at this time, where a lot of guys from high school still remember how engaged and welcoming and concerned my parents were for them when they came over at any given time of the day. And so that was one thing I was thinking about that made my house, like that made me want to bring friends over, was the fact that I knew when they showed up in my house, my parents were going to be the first ones to engage with them. And especially too, I can remember distinct times where I was just done hanging out and they'd be there for another hour, just kind of hanging out with them while I was like sleeping or just jamming on the game system or something like that. And so that's one element that really sticks out to me clearly is that they were so engaged. And furthermore, I mean, they were willing to talk about God with my friends too, if that came up, which is something that was just kind of this ace in the hole that I never really anticipated at that time. It was really cool. Another one too is there's a huge level of flexibility where after school, anyone I brought over was fine. It could be one person, it could be five people, or it could be the 22-year-old mentally handicapped guy that my mom's talking about. And I can remember the first day we brought him home, had no idea what our family was getting herself into, and ended up being awesome. And it still is, but it's so it went all across the board. It could be three or four people from my volleyball team where we were looking for a place to hang out afterwards. And I think that was the thing too, is it made the house worth hanging out at afterwards, is because we knew we were welcome. I knew that I could bring whoever, and it didn't have to be, you know, a 2-day in advance planned thing. And that there was a great deal of flexibility and like furthermore, a lot of grace often extended for my lack of forethought or consideration for anything that'd be going on in my parents' life. And also, I think another one, too, is like, even just as far as spending the night goes, I can remember a lot of 11 o'clock calls where I ran into three friends and they don't know where they're going to stay the night or they want to hang out. And I could call over and be like, I have three guys that are at the football game and don't know what they're doing tonight. And they want to come over. And there's a great deal of flexibility extended there as well where, you know, I just never felt super pressured to have all these things planned out. And I mean, which is something that I don't do very well. So that's a whole nother side note. But the fact was, like, I think there was just a real enjoyment, and like I felt like that was just something that helped out so much, was thinking that I don't have to be afraid of bringing people over here, and furthermore, I can be excited about that because I know my parents want to be engaged with my friends and want to be in their lives, and furthermore, like, are excited to have them over here. And I mean, then even on the food side, that's just something that kind of like sticks out as like a legendary thing among well, my current roommates now, and like everybody in high school, they knew coming over they were going to get fed. They knew that was going to be a big deal that they got fed. And I've seen many people convinced into being fed, even if like they weren't hungry. And so that was like just on the level of hospitality. There's things like that where they were hospitable and like still are. I mean, we have Wednesday night family dinner now, and there's still a lot of like 20-minute beforehand phone calls where two or three roommates decide to show up and who had just been hanging out at the house. And that's still something that's very, very, very okay, and I'm really grateful for. So, I guess, and then the last one, too, is just a real commitment to my friends where, you know, not to, like, pump up, you know, whatever, my parents' ego or anything. But something that was awesome was that there was guys, like one guy who I've been friends with for 8 years, and, you know, is pretty pretty broken dude, it's hard to, like, interact with him sometimes. Is the one thing he still, like, holds out is, like, man, your mom is awesome. Like, you know, and that's something that's come up multiple times in conversations about who God is or what he would mean to this guy, Greg, is that, your mom was so good to me, and I don't meet a lot of moms like that. And I think that's something that I'm just really grateful for as well, is that there was a real commitment to these guys' lives. It probably reflected a lot of thought that went on outside of, like, you know, maybe the half an hour they were over that week, is that they were engaged in, like, probably prayer for these guys, thought for these guys, and ways to, like, what questions to ask these guys when they showed up. And then we're willing to sit down and, like, talk about, you know, how bad that math teacher is for 20 minutes and, like, be really excited about that as well. So it seemed like there's a real level of humility in engaging with my friends. I mean, I don't know. It's just, like, a lot of it was, like, the flexibility and, like, the engagement and the desire were things that stuck out and wanted me to bring over friends. And just there was no rigidity to it. And there's a lot of grace extended for my lack of thinking and, like, my lack of concern or empathy for what might be going on with them. And just then the commitment to my friends was something I'm really grateful for and still happens now. So that's kind of some of the things I think about that are good. So
thanks, Kevin. Thanks. Yep. There you go. Yeah, yeah, sure. Go ahead and ask questions now.
So Patrice grabs one of your friends and, you know, sits them down. What's going on in your life? What's some good questions to ask, you know, that's, they're not going to be like, you know, you're freaking me out.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of it was, especially with this guy, Greg, who I've been friends with a long time, he played football. So a lot of it was just, what's football? How's football going on? Like, how are you playing? Are you excited about this year? You know, school. It's like, how are your grades doing? Greg's like, well, I'm not really going to class. And there'd be this level of like, come on, Greg. Like, you know, and then sort of that empathy, like where if I do it to Greg, it's kind of like a get off my back, dude. Like, you don't go to class sometimes too kind of thing. But I think there's kind of this level of concern showed for my parents where it was like, come on, like, let's, you know, like almost kind of playing that parental figure. So I think some of it's kind of like case-by-case basis where some guys never would have wanted to have that level of, like, this sort of, you know, I want to work, you know, help you out, whatever I can, or encourage you. But other guys were like, they loved it. And, like, they love being able to kind of, like, lay on some of the things that they've been thinking about. But a lot of it was just, like, engagement in school and just, like, what the guy's interested in, and then bringing it back up when they saw him again, so.
Well, I find myself more kind of on the legalistic side and uptight, I find that. And, you know, when your friends come over, what about the language? Was there just freedom for them to be who they were?
Hey, Mike, why don't you come up here, too? My husband's here. He was part of it. It's definitely a joint thing. So if we can just, I got some other stuff we can do, but if we've got questions, we can just ask a bunch of questions now. And Mike will have some answers, too. It's my husband, Mike. Yeah.
Because that's one thing my son said. He's like, I don't think you want them to come over because they're going to be cussing the whole time. And I'm like,
I didn't care. They're just a couple words. I mean, I didn't care if they dropped an F-bomb. That was the least of my worries. When you knew some of the things these kids were doing outside of the house, saying the F-bomb was about the least thing we had to worry about. And I knew our children were going to swear anyway. It wasn't like these were kids with bad influence. And only that's the only place they ever heard that bad language was from the kids, not from their parents. We would never say anything like that. Yeah, so language, it wasn't an issue. No. Yeah. Because what is the most important thing? What do I want them to understand about Christianity? Not that God's upset if you say the F-bomb, but God wants a relationship with you, and he loves you, and he wants you to learn to love people, not watch your language. So that's what we wanted to communicate as kids came over to the house. Yeah.
Along that same lines, but beyond language, you had, obviously, you're a Christian home. You had probably house rules about co-eds and girls and drugs and alcohol and things like that. Did you extend those rules to the kids that were visiting? And then did kids maybe say, well, your house isn't cool enough, you know, I can't do anything I want to do? Did you have that kind of thing? Did you have rules that you extended to those kids that were visiting?
Minimal.
I think one of the things thinking about was there was a lot of rules that like I broke a lot but I think the thing that was really cool was like I didn't think I looked at them as these rules where it's like these rules are oppressive and like I break one I'm grounded for a week kind of thing. I think one thing that was cool was in hindsight reflecting it's like they were out of genuine concern, the things that like I wish would have taken a little more seriously. And I think the other thing too is like when that happened, there's a lot of conversation about like why this happened kind of thing. And then for me, I think it was kind of extended where it's like if a friend of mine would be like, hey man, I'm like really, I'm drunk, I need somewhere to go kind of thing, be like, oh, that's cool, not my house. You know, and like that was something that like never had to, I don't know, we didn't have to cross that as much as mm-mm. I think. I don't know.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think she gets to this later in the talk, but since we're talking about some of this now, just practically the way our house is set up, it's partly, like she said, there's only living room, dining room, but we intentionally keep everything on the first floor. And so when kids are over, and this just helps you with your interaction with them, even if you're doing other stuff, you're always there. And the computer, the monitor is faced out towards the front of the room, and it's in a little card table in the corner of the dining room. Is it that convenient? No. Does it look great? No. But it's there. So everything's kind of designed so you just partly bump with the kids when they're there. Because if they were down the basement in a rec room, then for you to go down there, it's kind of awkward because it's like, what are you doing down here? But because everything's right together, it just helps facilitate that interaction, and it doesn't make it strange because you're around them, because mm-hmm. you're just there, and this is the house. And so that just is kind of a practical thing that we've done to just try to have more access. And then it makes it practically, they're not so inclined to do drugs when they're just sitting in your dining room with them or something like that. So it just kind of works out that way, too.
Yeah.
One thought I had, too. It kind of goes back to what the world thinks about you. And I remember there's a little community market right behind our house. It's in the Clintonville Community Market. We live down that area. And I remember talking to someone. I think it was over there. I was talking to someone, and they were talking about the halfway house in the neighborhood. Good. And I'm sitting there racking my brain. The halfway house. Where's the halfway house? And they started describing where it was located. And all of a sudden, I realized they're talking about our house. I'm like, oh, okay. They just thought it was a halfway house, and I ultimately took that as a compliment. Right.
Yeah. But, you know, we never did have, not that I know of, we didn't ever have kids doing drugs or alcohol at the house. Now, if some kid would have been drunk and had no place else to go, we would have definitely said, sure, come on, you can come spend the night with us, that kind of thing. But, yeah, and there were rules. Boys and girls didn't go upstairs. Oh, no. And then we'd be pretty clear about that. It's like, no. So that kind of stuff. But we never had a lot of kids push back like that. No. We were very for it. But we were involved with the kids. We'd go to the other. One thing you can do as a parent of a teenager, go to this other kid's football game. Go to their track meet. Even if your kids aren't involved, you go to their play. You go to their musical. And it builds into this, and so they're more inclined to come to your house because you watched me play football. This great kid, I know he's a linebacker. I saw him play a great game, and so I saw him in the hall. I'm like, Greg, you kick butt. And so then he's more inclined to come to our house because I care, and we communicated that we care about you. So, I mean, that's just a real, and that's almost unheard of. If you go to somebody else's cross-country meet, and a parent's there, they'll say, well, whose kid's running? We're like, nobody. What? And you're here? I'm like, yeah, this is my school. This is where my kids go to school. This is our school. Of course we're going to come watch our kids' friends play sports or be in a play.
And they would, a girl, Samaya, comes to mind, and yeah. She would know that we were there for her, and because our girls don't do sports. And so that would be appreciative. Also, she loves pizza rolls and wintergreen mints.
Right.
So I go to Target, and I buy this 10-pound bag of wintergreen mints. And it's always there, and that's right. Samaya. So right. She comes over. We always have pizza rolls, and we have wintergreen mints, and right. and chocolate chip cookies. So those right. are just things we know they like, and we do, and we like them too. So it's not like it's sacrifice or anything. It's a win-win.
Yeah.
But that helped as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Ruth.
Mike and Patrice, can you talk some about coaching your kids to have the same outlook? Obviously, you guys were modeling it for them, but just thinking about having, especially when your kids were younger, it's like, you're talking about this is why it's hard for us to have this attitude, but I'm just imagining, and all your kids they're so great. They can get into anybody's life. They're like some of the most patient, young adults I know. And I know that's something that you guys have cultivated in them. By putting them in, allowing them to see, no, we serve people here and maybe you want to do this, but here's the need. Can you just talk some about coaching your kids to have that kind of attitude?
One thing that comes to mind, and I think it fits in, is one thing we've done is we've had one-on-one time with our kids ever since they can remember, probably.
Right.
And it's generally around food or it could be the park or something like that, but and with four kids, of course, trying to coordinate all that, and I would do two kids a week, and she would do those two kids a week, then we'd flip the next week, and I remember when Calumet's lunch was at 10:15 in the morning, and I was leaving at work at 10:15 to go to lunch. Yeah. You do what you need to do, but the point was that one-on-one time, especially when they're real, they can't, and Kevin, you could verify this. I don't know that they could remember a time when we've never gotten together with them one-on-one. And I say that partly because that builds that interaction. And it's not quality time at all. Sometimes you'd hardly talk for a half hour. But it's just spending time together, and that quality comes out of the quantity. Right. But just having that time together, it builds that
love bank.
That love base. And then especially when they're real little and they want to be with you, because when you get to junior and high and high school, that's when they're going to tend to pull away. But if you have that already established in the DNA in your family, it will allow you to push through, which I personally think junior high is probably the most difficult, but it would push through that time when they still, even though they don't want to be with you, they're still with you. Yeah. So
but I think the thing is, because they knew they had one-on-one time with us, they weren't as threatened when we had other people at the house, because they know, and the kids did know, I have lunch with Dad on Tuesday. And so we were pretty good about having some kind of family time and daytime with our kids. And so there was always this core that we have our time. So that enabled us to do that. And it is something that they just grew up with. Our whole life, our married life and kid life, we've always had people. So they, in one sense, they knew no other way. And when they did complain about it, I stole this line from Laura Gordon. Like, well, I don't want to have so-and-so over for dinner. I'd say, well, I didn't know this was even about you. I'm so sorry that you're so misinformed, because this dinner has nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with our friend that we're having over for dinner. So get over it. Very tactfully and graciously, but I stole that from Gordon. This is not about you. No. This is about going to someone's party. This is about having our friends over. And, you know, the simple things, they'd help us clean up. But I didn't make them do it too much, so it didn't become like a big pain in their butt. Oh, my God, Mom and Dad's having a party, so I'm stuck. And so I didn't always make them, because it's like, well, it's our party. We didn't even ask you kids. And so I wouldn't always be so hard line that they had to help, but give them the opportunity to help. And then what I think we've done better lately is when they have sacrificially love somebody, like when they have taken John to the movies, to make sure I acknowledge that what you did was really a great thing. I noticed that. God noticed the way you served. And even as a little kid, it's God noticed that. Not like, oh, praise, oh, gosh, you brush your teeth so well. But what you did was really important, and thank you. Thank you for helping me clean up. Thank you for doing the dishes, because things are nuts. So
one just thing to add to that is when we were approached to have Sasha move in with us, and it was a scary decision because we didn't really know him that well. And so we sat down with our kids and said, listen, this has been presented to us. We're not sure about this. So we talked about it. We prayed about it and actually got their buy-in. That's one of the reasons why we went forward with it. Because and so we didn't make the decision overnight. We prayed, we thought it through, and they were realizing, we kind of talked about what that was going to look like with him living with us. We only have one bathroom in our house, and there's six of us, and so you get like 8 minutes in the morning, and that 8 minutes, if you miss it, you go to the back of the line.
Right.
And so just even having another person in there and what that's going to look like. And then the girls, God love them, you know, they would kick Sasha's butt, and he's like 6'4", African-American kid, and they'd go in there, and he wouldn't get out of bed, and, you know, they're little freshmen in high school. They'd kick on his door and say, Sasha, get up now. You got to get moving. So we didn't even have to do it. They actually had a role in the reason why he graduated from high school, because they would just kick his butt.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Kathy, yeah.
I had something to say about Ruth's question. I'm not naturally hospitable. I can't cook to save my life. Our house, the house, they come get frozen pizza, so that works. But I think we used to host a home group every week at our house and some other things, and we had to, like, it didn't fit unless we moved half the furniture in the garage and, you know, whatever. And for me, I think it helped my kids, when I let them know, this does not come natural to me. Here's why I'm doing it.
Right.
Here's the things that you just listed out. This is the reason that I'm willing to do this, even though, like, and they would watch. Sometimes my attitude would be foul, and I would say, you know, pray with me. Here's what I want.
Right.
Help me
right.
get there. And just being honest, like, yes. Yeah, this is I'm not going to lie and pretend this is easy, but I still want to do it. And that helped them kind of develop that, you know, instead of thinking, well, it's natural for Mom, that's her gig, you know.
Right. So. Yeah. Yeah. So, and we tried to make it fun. So, I mean, if it's a drag every time somebody comes over to your house, hell, why would a kid want to do that? But we made it fun. Yeah. So, is there any other questions or? All right. I just had a couple more points and then we can quit. It is easy to talk yourself out of it, right? You think, you know, you should invite your neighbors over, but what are the things you think about? My house isn't clean enough. It's not the right food, but thanks, Kathy. She can say frozen pizza is good sometimes, right? It's going to be a mess. It's going to be a hassle. I don't want to clean up. And the list goes on and on. But they're just excuses, right? And people don't care so much what you feed them. It's the attitude you feed them with, right? I'm grateful you're here. I remember one time I invited more people than I had food. So when we sat down, I said, now, you know, I invited more people than I have food, so everybody gets one helping to start with. So we all get, and these are people I knew fairly well. I said, everybody gets one helping, and then what, depending on how much we have left, we can go for seconds. But for right now, just one helping. And I mean, it was, we all laughed about it. So practical suggestions we talked a lot about already. But, you know, as a mom, when you got little kids, if your house will be the one where everybody comes to for lunch, your house is the one where you put the slip and slide in the backyard and your grass gets destroyed. You're the one that has the Kool-Aid stand and the kids make the Kool-Aid in your house and there's sugar all over your floor. God, I hated that. And then that little red Kool-Aid and be, ugh. But those are the kind of things that you're going to have to be the one that opens your house to do this stuff. With high school kids, we've talked a lot about it. But I think I realized at some point God said, treat them like you would treat any of your friends. So if one of my friends comes to my door, I don't go, hi. I say, wow, it's really good to see you. Don't stay away so long. Where have you been? It's so good to see you. And this particular one guy that we've been talking about, pray for this guy. He needs the Lord. And so when I see this kid, I hug him. I'm like, don't you stay away so long. Come on by. I want to see what's going on in your life. Where are you working now? What's going on? And so it's an attitude that we communicate to kids that they pick up on, right? So we've been going at it for almost an hour. So unless there's any other questions or comments, and if you have something you want to talk about particularly, I'll hang around for a while. But any other questions or comments, we'll call it a day. But you know what? My last point. What's the next step when you hear something like this? For some people here this morning, your first step may be coming to know God's love for you. It's very difficult to give away something that you don't have. If you don't know what it is, what it's like to experience this unconditional, never-changing love of the Lord, I would encourage you to talk to your friend who brought you, to think about the fact that you're separated from God and that you need a Savior, that you need someone to bridge that gap. That might be the first step for some of you. For some of us, you might need to really go before the Lord and admit, Father, my stuff has become more important than you, than your people that I say is that they're going to go to hell apart from you. So there may be just this agreeing with God that the term is repentance. I mean, it's just agreeing with God. Lord, what you've shown to me is I've lost your love for people, and I have become enthralled, and my affections have been stolen by my comfort or by my stuff or whatever it is. And so that might be the step for some of us here this morning. And the step for some of you may be just to go ahead, go home and call your neighbor and say, come over for dinner tomorrow night, or call a friend, or call a single parent. I don't know any single parent that doesn't love to have somebody call and say, hey, do you want to come over for dinner and bring your three kids? Or say, I'll bring you dinner, something. But there's somebody out there that desperately, that is lonely, alienated, broken, that our meager efforts God can't use to do exceedingly abundantly all that we ask or think. So just think, you know, Lord, what are you calling me to do today? Maybe it's learn how to bake chocolate chip cookies. I don't know.